Know. Live. Transform. This is 702. This is 702. For the curious.
And it's time for Matter of Fact with Africa Check. And I'd like to welcome on the line Kate Wilkinson, the Deputy Chief Editor at Africa Check. Good afternoon, Kate. Good to speak to you.
Good afternoon.
Kate, so let's get right into it. You guys have got an interesting task on your hands, especially in these days of COVID-19, and that's fact-checking and myth-busting, essentially, because, of course, with technology and the amazing access to information that it brings, are these opportunities for misinformation. So let's start go ahead.
I was going to say, absolutely. We have been in the fact-checking business since 2012 in South Africa, and we now have offices across the continent, additionally in Kenya, Nigeria, and Senegal. And we spend our days sorting fact from fiction and trying to make sure that debates and discussions in the public sphere are really based on accurate information, because that helps us get to the best solutions to our problems.
Absolutely. So the first story that we're going to be taking a look at is South Africa's ANC ignores COVID-19 social distancing at a party. Tell us about that story and what was circulating.
Yeah, so we do a lot of fact checking on Facebook, because I think anyone who's been on the platform knows how quickly a false story can be shared and become fact to people. So this was flagged to us, and I'm sure some of your listeners would have seen it. And this was a post that suggested that not only President Cyril Ramaphosa, but also over 50 members of the ANC were not adhering to the regulations regarding lockdown, and in fact had gone to a birthday party in early June, and they were not social distancing, they were hugging each other, and they really weren't following the rules that they were expecting us to follow.
Yeah. And of course, the outcome was you found that this was, in fact, false, and these were old photographs from about 2 years ago.
Absolutely. And this is often something that we see, is that sometimes pictures can be completely manipulated and almost created, and that's when we see pictures that are photoshopped or edited to create a new story. But sometimes misleading people is just as easy as finding an old picture and giving it new context. So in this instance, the pictures that were showed online did show President Ramaphosa and a number of other members of the ANC at a party. It did show them hugging and embracing each other, but it is not from 2020, and it's definitely not from a lockdown. It actually shows pictures from 2018, and they were tweeted by the president last year in 2019, and it was a birthday message to Andrew Langeni, who was an anti-apartheid activist and actually spent 26 years on Robben Island. So the pictures are real. The president did tweet them and shared them, but the way that they're being circulated and shared now, claiming to show how members of the ANC and our president are acting, is completely false.
Yeah. And of course, the implications are that under level 3 lockdown, with not more than 50 people allowed to gather for specific things at places of worship or even at funerals, the implication is that, well, if the ruling party doesn't do it, why should we, right? So giving strength to that kind of attitude. What I'm keen to find out from you, Kate, is how you were able to track down the source, the real source of an age of the pictures.
Well, that's the good thing, is that it's not rocket science. Anyone can do what you do when it comes to tracing images. It's especially easy if you're on a laptop or a computer and you can get access to one. And if you have Chrome, or even if you don't, you can use Google Reverse Image Search. And by uploading the picture, it will find other instances of when it's being shared. And in that way, we were able to trace these images back to the tweet. But another thing to do if you find that these skills are a bit too tricky is often just searching for a description of the picture. We often see this when it comes to videos and images that are shared claiming to show incidents of violent xenophobic attacks in South Africa. Often if you Google a phrase that describes the picture, listeners might remember in the most recent attacks, there was a video that was shared very widely that claimed to show a building in downtown Johannesburg that was on fire.
Yes, I remember that.
In the video, there were people jumping out of the building, and it was very disturbing to watch. But when you Googled those phrases, you were actually able to find that the video wasn't from South Africa. It was actually from India. So take a step back, pause before you share something, do a little bit of detective work. We all have those skills, and see if you can actually find what the truth is before you help push along a story and a narrative that isn't true.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think what's so key and what's encouraging is knowing that on Twitter, for instance, what they're doing now is asking you if you're about to retweet or send on a tweet that you a story that you actually haven't read, they ask you if you'd like to take a look at it first before forwarding. It's really, really important, especially during these times, to, you know, do your own bit of research before, as it were, republishing information.
Absolutely. And there are things that you can also do on Facebook. If you see a post on Facebook and you are suspicious of it, or you just know that it's false, what you can do is you can actually report it to the platform. On every post, there are three little dots in the top right-hand corner. If you click on those, you can report the content and you can flag it as potentially false news. And what that does is it actually adds it to a list of information that Africa Check can have access to. And if we investigate a post on Facebook and we find that it's not true, and this is a case where that happened with these pictures supposedly showing members of the ANC not adhering to the regulations, we fact check it, we rate it. So if you ever want to share this Facebook post in the future, you'll also get a notification warning you that it's been found to be false and just giving you a bit more context.
Yeah, lovely stuff. If you've just joined us, we're doing a matter of fact with Africa Check right now. And my guest on the line is Kate Wilkinson, the deputy chief editor at Africa Check. And we're looking at stories that have made the rounds that have been found to be problematic and in some instances outright lies. The next story that we're looking at, Kate, is Nkosazana Dlamini Zuma is a medical doctor, but not registered to practice in South Africa. What is that story about?
So again, there was a message, actually a couple of messages that were being shared on Facebook, going quite viral, getting a lot of traction. And essentially the message and the story that was being promoted was that Minister Dlamini Zuma, who is our Minister of Cooperative Governance, the claim was that she is not a medical doctor. Her license has been erased. She's been removed from the medical role. And in one instance, the claim was actually that she had falsified her title. And just like I explained how you can flag these sort of posts, this message was flagged to us as potentially false. And then we set about trying to investigate it and see what we could find.
Yeah. And I guess what's key is that, you know, once again, it aims at discrediting someone who's in a crucial position during this lockdown and pandemic time, when we're essentially taking our lead from her in terms of what policies we're following regarding lockdown and how we deal with this pandemic. So crucial to interrogate messaging around that. Now, you went ahead and tackled the claim about registration to practice medicine. Talk to me about that as well.
Yeah, so this is an example of how a little bit of information can either be misinterpreted or misrepresented to other people. And in this Facebook post, there was a screenshot of Minister Dlamini Zuma's page on the Health Professional Council of South Africa's registry. And it says that her registration is listed as erased. And this is what, in many instances, has been presented as evidence that she is not a medical doctor. I think an important thing to distinguish right away is that it's a very different thing to be qualified as a doctor and then to be registered to practice medicine in South Africa. And in order to be registered and practice medicine in South Africa, you have to register with the Health Professionals Council of South Africa. And that includes paying annual fees and meeting their requirements. And what we have confirmed is that erasure from the register does not necessarily mean that you've either failed to pay or that you don't meet the requirements. And this can be voluntarily done if a person doesn't intend to practice medicine for a period of time. And this is often the case when someone is working in government or has a career in the public sector. Okay. We can confirm that.
I was going to ask, sorry, Kate, that the erasure does not mean as well that you would not be able to register or re-register at a later point.
Absolutely. And we were able to confirm that the minister does hold a medical degree, which she got from the University of Bristol in the United Kingdom, where she qualified in 1978. And this, in fact, is also noted on the register that has been shared. So I think also another example of how, with a little bit of detective work, you can set the record straight and make sure that you don't share something online that is not true and also could mislead people. And really not help encourage accurate debate and discussion.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you so much for that discussion and dispelling those myths, Kate. Looking forward to hearing you bring us the next matter of fact with Africa Check next week. We're going to move on now and talk about what we know about COVID-19 and smoking so far. Thanks so much. That was Kate Wilkinson, Deputy Chief Editor at Africa Check. Are we keeping Kate on the line? We are. Sorry, I was about to dismiss you, Kate. You stay on the line. Let me welcome on the line Pietri Jansen van Vier, who's a medical doctor based in Gauteng with a postgraduate background, there. Pietri, thank you so much for your time today. Really appreciate you making the time.
Thank you for that very warm welcome. Lovely to be here.
Despite the fact that I tried to separate you from Kate as well. Now let's talk about this work that you've done into smoking during COVID times, and what were the key findings what were you looking at fundamentally in this research that you did, Fetri?
Okay, so perhaps let's just start with just giving all of this some context. We know that we've been in lockdown now since 26 March, and we know that our smokers have long been suffering since then, with essentially the sale of tobacco being banned. Mm-hmm. And this has been taken to court in May by the Fair Trade Independent Tobacco Association. And essentially, the minister, Nkosazana Zuma, is arguing in her defense that there's nothing sinister behind this ban of tobacco, and she's based the decision on the relevant medical literature. Mm-hmm. Now, if you analyze the evidence she cites in the review, then, or rather in the affidavit, what you find is that all the studies she quotes all refer back to one single meta-review, now meta-review being a review of multiple smaller studies.
Sure.
And the single paper's finding was published early on in the COVID pandemic, and it found that yes, smokers are actually at slightly greater risk of worse outcomes if they do contract COVID. Now, that's what we investigated. Is this actually the accurate conclusion, and are smokers at greater risk if they contract COVID-19?
Now, Pietri, as a medical doctor, and you obviously do work in human physiology research as well, talk to me about, in terms of standard practice or best practice, when do you use research to base policy on? And you've mentioned the fact that a single review was used to back up the regulations we're currently operating under for lockdown level 3.
So it's actually very tricky, because established medical convention is that we know smoking is very bad for you. It affects virtually every single system in the body, almost always in a very negative manner. So medically speaking, it seems a rather obvious conclusion that surely what is viewed as a respiratory virus, smoking would be a general bad decision. But what we're seeing, and despite what the initial evidence says, as we gather more and more information, it's always good to review policy, review new decisions based on the most up-to-date findings. And that's sort of the crux of what this whole article is about, analyzing the most up-to-date literature around the smoking topic. And does what we necessarily instinctively believe about smoking hold up in the context of COVID-19?
Mm-hmm. Well, tell us, has this changed then? Has what our conventional understanding of smoking been changed under COVID-19?
I think that was perhaps the biggest surprise for me doing the research on this piece, and for many others as well, is as the pandemic's gone on and we've gotten more and more studies published and we've seen more and more data come out from multiple different countries, a trend is emerging where across sample sizes of thousands and thousands, tens, 20,000 of infected COVID-19 patients, we're seeing this bizarre trend that the number of smokers infected and admitted to hospital with COVID-19 is dramatically less than the same proportion you would expect from the number of smokers you have in your population.
Sure.
So,
and what do you...
Go on.
What do you take away from that?
So ideally, in an ideal world, we would have had studies directly analyzing the effect of smoking on COVID-19. Sadly, we haven't got that. So we're forced to sort of withdraw these inferences from correlational data. And what we are suspecting is that COVID does seem to have somewhat of a protective effect when it comes to reducing your likelihood of infection. I mean, sorry, smoking, not COVID, sorry. Smoking in the context of COVID does have a somewhat protective effect.
And, you know, it's quite interesting, Kate, from your vantage point, this kind of data being used to motivate for level 3 lockdown regulations to be relaxed with regards to smoking. How viral do stories of this nature have? How viral have they gone, and how much are they being forwarded and shared?
Well, I think what we've already seen around this issue with smoking and COVID is the importance of having not just accurate information forming the basis of debate, but also the basis of regulations. And in this instance, we see how important it is to have someone with understanding of medicine, of health, of the issues at hand, such as Petri, to bring his expertise to the debate, to look objectively at the evidence, and to let the evidence lead us in that discussion. And I think, as Petri will go on to explain, there are some twists and turns. As you look into what happens to smokers when they get into hospital, the findings may be somewhat less surprising. But it really shows us why we need to constantly be questioning, not just for regulation, but also the research, because as you'll go on to hear, just because there's research on something doesn't necessarily mean that it's solid and set in stone.
Absolutely. Now, Petri, as Kate has mentioned, data suggests that smokers are, of course, underrepresented in these COVID-19 studies to begin with. So what initially might seem like good news or an argument on which you can underpin your call for smoking or cigarettes to be sold under lockdown level 3 might not necessarily be the case. Talk to us about the fact that smokers are underrepresented in COVID-19 studies so far.
So that's sort of what I've been alluding to so far, is that you end up running into this problem in a lot of these studies where to actually be able to draw accurate inferences from the data, you need these colossal sample sizes because the number of smokers ends up being such a small proportion within the broader sample. And then you firstly have to sort of hunt down your COVID positive cases, and then you have to hope, at least in this context, that the person is also a smoker. So that's why ideally you're looking for studies, again, with sample sizes. Normally we're talking thousands, if not tens of thousands, to actually be able to draw any kind of really accurate inference from the data. And then that's where we get this result that, strangely enough, smokers proportionally do seem to be less likely to be end up with COVID-19 compared to non-smokers.
And what then are the disease outcomes for smokers once they've gone to hospital?
I'm actually very glad that both yourself and Kate brought this up. So this is sort of where things tend more towards what we would expect with the smokers. We've now, on the one hand, have this strange result where they seem less likely to actually contract COVID. But once hospitalized, we have two big studies, the first of which comes from well-known evidence-based medicine advocate, Dr. Goldacre from the UK. And their group looked at the records of about 5,600 people in the UK who contracted COVID-19, were admitted, and then they looked at the risk factors for actually passing away with COVID-19. And their study found that smoking had a very, very weak protective effect, but the effect was so small that the health risk of smoking itself in other contexts would almost certainly sort of even it out.
Mm.
And then there's a second study from the US, which also looked at almost 12,000 patients, and they found that smoking was associated with greater mortality. So we aren't exactly sure where we stand, but it looks like at worst, smoking gives you a chance of having a worse outcome if you do contract COVID-19, versus at absolute best, a vanishingly small chance of a slightly positive outcome.
Yeah. And that vanishingly small chance that you're talking about is nicotine related, am I right? Which has led to nicotine being an avenue for research, but of course no proof yet.
True. So I'm really hesitant to sort of put my stamp and say this is definitely what's responsible for the effect we see.
Okay, okay.
But the problem is in smoking, it's a very inhaling, it's a very complex mixture of chemicals, of which the vast majority are carcinogens or outright toxins. Nicotine is the only one that you can sort of physiologically argue it might be playing a beneficial role, but we have no good real-world proof. We have some old animal studies which have shown it might have a very weak anti-inflammatory effect in the lung, or maybe it may change the immune response slightly, which could, in theory, be why we're seeing what we're seeing, but there's no evidence on humans that has yet been proven that nicotine definitely improves outcomes in COVID-19.
Sure. So all of this, Kate, essentially to say, until we're sure, we can't. It's irresponsible to spread around these messages and to be hard-headed about what we're pushing for. Yeah, in terms of policy, this is really some food for thought in the sense that we really actually are a long way away from having confirmed and confirmed information and research that we can rely on.
I think the lesson here is that until we're sure about, you know, where we stand with this, let's be honest. There is a lot of research coming out. A lot of it may have weaknesses or flaws because of the speed at which it's being produced, because of the samples, because of whether people want to admit to smoking or not when they surveyed. But just because we're not 100% sure, we need to be honest about what we're looking at, what the limitations could be, and really just take the public into our confidence and share the reliability, the strength of the evidence, and use it to back up policy and be honest about what we do and we don't know.
All right, fantastic. Thank you so much to the both of you for that really interesting conversation. That is Kate Wilkinson, Deputy Chief Editor at Africa Check, and Pietrie Janssen van Vuren, Medical Doctor based in Gauteng. Really appreciate both your time.